Our text today is the first third of John chapter 9. And we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 12 today. I would like to go back a little bit and make sure that we remember that, and I'm using some terminology here again for those who haven't been with us over our study in John. We're coming to the sixth sign today. So remember, there are seven signs in the first half of John's Gospel. The great sign of those seven is the raising of Lazarus from the dead. So we're getting close. We've got one sign left. And then when we come to the second part of John, now the great sign is the resurrection of Christ from the dead. And so, I want us today to see that this passage is not the first time that Jesus has said, "I am the light of the world." So if you would, turn back with me to John 8 and verse 12. So, John 9 is our text today, but I wanted to read I'm just going to read the first verse here. So John 8, verse 12. And Jesus spoke to them, saying, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." He's not talking about physical light that's going into pupils in your eyeballs. He's talking about the light of life. What does that mean? And then our passage today, John chapter 9, and we'll read verses 1 through 12. John 9, verses 1 through 12. As he passed by, that is Jesus, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam." Then John inserts this interpretation. The word Siloam means sent. So he went and washed and came back clean. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he's like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes open?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, anointed my eyes, and said to me, 'Go wash, go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." When are we there? I want to go on, but we're going to take a couple of weeks to go through this passage because I think there's a lot for us to learn and to think about in this passage. "I am the world's light," Jesus says. He is shining brightly all around us. The problem is not with the brilliance of Jesus' light, but with the blindness of our eyes. Again, I want to be clear, we're going to be going back and forth today, intentionally, between talking about eyes with regard to what you see, There are some people, let's start here. There's a lot of people today who have serious problems with their eyes. I think one of them. We have, what percentage of the room has glasses on today, right? Because we have problems with our eyes. It's not unusual. But at the same time, we're not ultimately talking about eyeballs, but we're talking about the sight of the heart. The sight that puts things together, that orients your life off of things that your heart knows to be true. Pay attention to John's treatment of the sixth sign here today. He gives more than 40 verses to an extended story about this blind man. Compared to an average of 10.5 verses to all the previous five signs. This story is unique to John. There's no other book that talks about this specific instance. And this is reminding us that there are many other signs, John says, maybe hundreds of them, that are not recorded in the Gospels. We need to remember that the Gospels are in no way exhaustive. They're meant to be illustrative about the totality of Jesus' word and teaching. Jesus, the light of the world, is the sovereign God, bringing his purposes to pass regardless of human reactions or inadequacies. I want you to think about those two words. In the word reaction, I have in mind someone who's probably begging. Jesus is the light that they say, no, he's not. But also, Jesus is the light. He's shining, and there's some people who are simply inadequate. They can't see. When I was a young person, I had one of the most momentous nights of my life when I traveled to the Lost Cave in Sweetwater, Tennessee. I was at a church conference, and it was announced that we would be spending the night beside America's largest underground lake. This is how they build themselves. I don't know if it's true or not. But we traveled a long way from the conference, I remember that, to the lake. And then we spent the next 3 hours knocking around down underground. And if you've been to Tennessee, you know that red clay. Everyone's clothes were red. Their skin was red. Their lips were red. At the end of the time, I have vivid memories of that. We started out on the big wide paths where they had the little electric lights shining on the sides. It was kind of like a geology type. Then we went to the less developed part of the cave where there were no lights, but we had our flashlights. But then it came time to go to bed. And they told us now we're going to go out and we're going to turn out the lights in the cave. Are you ready for that? Make sure you have a flashlight. Either so you have a backup flashlight. They went out and I waited. It was probably, 3 or 4 minutes after they left us before they flipped off the light. And the lights went out. And then our leaders, now we were all very tired, they said, okay, turn out your flashlights. I remember laying on that black tarp on a really hard clay floor in my sleeping bag, thinking about the hundreds and hundreds of feet of earth above me. I'm in the bowels of the earth, and my eyes can't see. I think that Jesus is teaching us something far more than how to heal blind people in these verses. Now I would point out that Jesus gives us a reason for healing to happen, that the works of God might be displayed in them. And I want you to think about it. I know some of you have worked on eyeglasses. Some of you have been involved in this aspect of medicine, and we've actually learned so much more about how to heal people who face serious eyesight issues. But I'm really persuaded that there's more going on in this text. John wants us to see ourselves, no matter what the condition of our eyeballs are, in this text. So let's look at it together. The first point this morning is that Jesus is the light shining in redemptive work. In verses 3 and 5, we see something of the nature of this. That is, these disciples, with Jesus at their side, saw this man. We don't know exactly how, but they know that this is not someone who had blindness develop, right? There are various diseases, various sicknesses that can result in blindness. I think much of what was considered blindness in the old days was what we would call cataracts today, and I know there's several of us, including myself, who have been healed of this, what previously would have just simply, you would have been blind. It's an amazing thing to think about. But they see this man who's blind from birth, and the disciples immediately view the man's disability as God's punishment for sin. I want you to think about this. The impulse is, who sinned? This man or his parents? Jesus, let's have a theology discussion here. Is it this man's sin or is it his parents' sin that caused this man to be born blind? That's the issue. And Jesus says, guys, you don't understand. Jesus is turning us, notice, from a law-framed consideration of creation to a gospel-framed center of creation. The issue is not what works did people do. Is this person righteous in their actions or not? Is this man righteous in his actions or not? Really, I think what they're asking is, do people suffer because of the sins of their parents? I think we could probably all answer that. But Jesus is saying, no, no, guys. Neither one of those things is what you need to focus on. The reason that this man was born blind was, in fact, for this very moment. Have you ever thought about that? That you are going through your life, and the script of your life has been written in eternity. You have no idea what it is, but somewhere along the line, there are going to be unique opportunities for you to what? Display the works of God in your life. Do you believe that? Do you believe that God has prepared good works beforehand so that you'll do them? And are you going to be ready? Are you going to be ready to do what God created you? God did not create you for sin. God created you to do the works of God. That's what Jesus did. And by the way, he did them perfectly. All that my Father has given to me, I'm doing. He did them perfectly. But I want us to see today that verse 3 centers us not on a law-based performance evaluating perspective on life. Rather, it's Jesus is moving from that law, if you will, to the gospel. The reason that there are people who are in need in our world is so that they might be helped, so that the works of God might be displayed in those particular places and with those particular people. It's hard. There are entire industries today that are devoted to helping people in their medical needs. And God is glorified as those needs are met. I want you to see that this idea of redemption is powerful. That when we learn to look through the lenses of redemption at all of reality, that in fact God is giving many opportunities for redemption to happen. Now, I'm not talking merely about people getting saved. I'm talking about families being held together. I'm talking about sick people being helped. I'm I'm talking about people with seizures, being helped through those seizures. I'm talking about the real, practical guts of life. Friends, we need to see that Jesus is the light, and that He's modeling for us redemptive work. The work that we do matters. Point number two, though, is sort of a sobering corollary to this. Point number two, even blind people do not defeat or frustrate God. One of the things that's interesting to me here, especially as we get down, as we meet this man, is that Jesus, you notice that it begins with a view of the conversation is about this man. Perhaps you've been in a room before where you've seen and there's been a conversation about you and you're like, hello, I'm right here. Okay? Usually people are a little too polite for that, but it happens. And I want you to notice that what Jesus does is first He turns the conversation to the glory of God, the works of God being displayed in this man. He says we must work the works of, and now this is going to be key to our chapter today, of Him who sent me. This word, sent, is linked to the name of the pool. And without going into the whole etymology here, the word shalom comes from the Hebrew word shalach, which means to send. And so Jesus is going to build this entire event on this day around the meaning of the Pool of Siloam. Now, you should know that the Pool of Siloam is at the very south end of this old city of Jerusalem. Back in the 90s, it was partially excavated. They knew they had found the pool. But now there's been immense work over the last 5 or 10 years in the old city of Jerusalem. There have been amazing finds that we'll be hearing about at a popular level in years to come. But one of the things that they've done and actually are still active in doing is completely excavating the Pool of Siloam. And it turns out it was a massive pool. This was essentially the well for the whole city of Jerusalem. Now, the water didn't come out of the ground, but rather there were wells on the east side of the city. They had built over those, created wooden, and covered them over with rocks so their enemies wouldn't even know they were there. But Hezekiah had dug a tunnel through the bedrock down to this lowest part of the city, the Pool of Siloam. And so go online, just type in Pool of Siloam, go on YouTube, some amazing excavations that have taken place right there where this event happened. And the whole thing is built around the word Siloam, the word meaning sent. And so Jesus sends him, if you will, to the pool. He has to go to that place. And what I want you to see here today is we need to see this poor man, this poor blind man. He's gotten this Jesus, the light of blood, yuck, on his eyes. And now can you see the man feeling his way through the city? Think about the blind person you see in our city. Now in our city we have this thing called the Americans with Disabilities Act that has made it much easier and much safer for people who are blind to move through a city like ours. Jerusalem was not like that. I don't know if this man went on a journey across the city all that often. But I want you to see this man, moving along, possibly stumbling on stairs. Even today, Jerusalem is very hilly, and so the streets literally have steps in them. And then there will be a little ramp in the middle where if you have like a wheelbarrow or your cart, and you get the tires to hit those right. Here's this man feeling his way through the city. Kind of like us. groping our way toward God so that perhaps we might find it. That's how Paul describes the natural condition of man. This man was physically blind. But now Jesus is setting up this greater story. He's already said he's the light of the world. And then he's come to reveal and to enlighten people with knowledge about his person and about God's purposes for his creation. Do you see how this question at the beginning has set this whole thing up? Why is this man blind? Is it blind because he did something bad? Shame on you. How dare you? You should be better. Or was this man blind so he could be healed? And so that people could know, oh, Jesus is the Messiah who fulfilled all those Old Testament prophecies. We looked at several of them this morning. About how when the Messiah came, he would bring light to their eyes and he would heal them. Gentiles. It's amazing. Jesus has a purpose. Jesus is leading us into God's purpose. That's all well and good, but what about those who haven't gotten the memo? What about those who are ignorant of God's purposes? What about those who don't understand it? For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruits of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. This man was physically blind, but I think there's something else going on here. He was also ignorant. I don't want to make too big a point out of this, but I'll point out that in verse 12, our reading today ended with an agnostic state. Does God exist? That's not a question that he's asked, but I'm asking us. Does God exist? I don't know. Is Jesus God? I don't know. Is the Bible a reliable source of information? I don't know. What's the purpose of life? I don't know. Where are you going in your life? I have no idea. Is there life after death? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Stop it! In fact, how do you know what you know? Do you believe that your sensory perceptions are accurate? Are they inherent? And why not? But can we gather true knowledge about the world from our sensory perception? I believe. Some people say that's all there is. You can't see, you can't see. That's fate. That's just the way things are. Whatever will be, will be. Do you believe? Well, let me say this about this naturalistic view of life, that matter is in fact a really prime candidate to be the thing from which everything else comes. Matter doesn't make decisions. Matter doesn't have hands. Matter doesn't have purpose. And what we see around us is the world infused with purpose. The light of the world is shining. And the question is, do we see it? And if not, why not? This leads us to the third point this morning. The blind man was delivered in a location, I'm struggling with how to put all this on one line, but in a location that means sent. So he was delivered in a location sent. So here he is, feeling his way along. The only thing he knew is he had to go to the pool of Siloam. He knew that that was there, he didn't know how to get there, so I don't know if he asked somebody. Maybe he had an assistant, the first century equivalent of a seeing eyeball that helped him get there. I don't know if he just stumbled his way through. I don't know if he asked for directions. I don't know, but he had to move through this city in order to get to this very lowest point of the city. It's shocking to stand. We stood on the stone pavement around the Pool of Siloam and looked up, and it was like we were looking up a mountain almost. And there you see the Temple Mount, the modern-day Temple Mount, where the Dome of the Rock is, looming up above you. It was a steep climb to get from the Pool of Siloam to the temple. We don't know where Jesus encountered this man, but Siloam is the lowest place in the city. It's like he's going back to the bottom, like he's returning to ground zero, if you will. And he's coming to the Pool of Siloam, and it's so simple. So he went and washed and came back clean. I think it took him a while to get there, and I bet it didn't take very long for him to get back. Unless he was still figuring out his eyesight. I wonder how quick do you learn to use your eyesight if you literally never had it in your life. But suddenly, he's aware, and he comes back. Now what's the significance of why did Jesus, this is the only time I know of where Jesus said, go do this, and then you'll be healed. Go away from me, and go over to this place, and then I will bring about what I promised with this blood stuff on your eyes. Trust me, sir. I'll take care of this. Do what I ask you to do. It's this pool that we need to think about. By the way, this same pool is referenced in Nehemiah 3:15. I believe the other reference is Isaiah 8, verse 6. This is called the Pool of Shiloh, or Shiloah, in the Old Testament. This was a place that was actually very critical to the defense plan of the city of Jerusalem. Because prior to this, they had to go outside the city, and the enemies could come and could basically take the spring and divert the spring, and the city would have no water. But once under Hezekiah, this was incorporated as part of the city and was brought within the city. Now the spring could run, had to run downhill with gravity. And so the only place where they could control it all the way from the mouth of the spring to the reservoir big enough, inside the city was to cut through the bedrock. And there's a whole story. Perhaps some of you have walked through the Hezekiah's tunnel underneath the city of Jerusalem. It's a fascinating invention that is there, talked about in the Bible, and is there to this day. But John explains the meaning of the pool's name to help readers who do not know Hebrew to see the connection between this water in the pool and Jesus. Jesus is the one who is sent by the Father. He has said, I'm the light of the world. Here's a man that cannot see the light. If you go to this place called sin, you will see. So he does, and he comes back. It says he comes back seeing. And so again, part of this is the physical eyesight, but part of this also is in seeing who Jesus really is. So look with me at verse 8. Now the man can see. Now the man is probably higher than a kite. And the neighbors, those who live around him, those who have seen him before as a beggar, were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, oh yeah, it's him. Others said, no, it's a lookalike. This guy can see. We know this can't be the man. But he kept saying, he's like, yeah, I'm that guy. I've been here, I have a wife, I've sat, don't know how old he was, but for a long time, I sat at that gate and I begged. Whatever people were willing to give me was what I lived on. We don't know the circumstances, but that's not the point of this testimony of John. But there was a debate. Could this man who was born blind, everybody knew that. You could look at his eyeballs and you could see that he could not see. Now suddenly, here he is, perfectly able to see. He kept saying, I'm the man. And as soon as he bore witness to the fact that, yeah, the person you're debating, that's me, it's as though everybody turns to him at once and says, look at what it says. So they, all these neighbors, all these people who were talking, said to him, then how were your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus, he had caught God his name, made mud, put in my eyes, and said, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and I washed, and I received my sight. Okay, so how? How could that possibly happen? Do you understand the sentence? Like, okay, I got that part. But like, metaphysically, like, you were born blind and now you're not blind. Think about, like, this would be amazing enough in our day. But in this day, to be blind was to be alienated from society. There was not the Americans with Disabilities Act ensuring that you had access to all the places you needed to go. You were dependent upon the good works of those around you, which glorified God. But he says, I went and I washed and I received my sight. And now this brings us to the last point this morning. That there's another kind of light that now enters into this text. It's not reference, but I think that it's intended for us to see it. Now all these people are asking the man questions, and we're going to see in the next couple of weeks that that questioning gets more and more and more intense. But point number four, a light is dawning in a sincere, incomplete witness. A sincere, he's telling the truth to the best of his ability. But they ask him, where is he? And he says, I don't know. I don't know. All I know is he told me to do this, and I did it. He told me to do this, and I did it. And now I can see. Friends, that's the kind of witness we need to be. Hopefully, over the course of our lives, we develop in our ability to articulate. We begin to think about, well, how about the natural and the supernatural? How do those go together? And does God use means, or does God work miraculously? Does God do miracles today? That's a very important question to think through. I'm persuaded that while God probably does not suspend the laws of physics, God does all kinds of miracles today. Miracles of timing, miracles of connection, miracles of regeneration, the souls of the people. Friends, God is alive and well on planet Earth. He is able to do more than we can ask or imagine. And he is at work in his world, gathering his people to himself. And I want you to notice that now here's the man giving answer. Now at this point, again, I think it's intended for us over these next 41 verses to see the progression of this man to the point where he actually becomes a believer in Jesus Christ. And this is where it starts. I know that I was like this, and Jesus did this, and now I'm different. Where is he? I don't know. Who is he? I don't know. But what I know is I've been changed. I am different than I was. The way I like to say it, God changed my life. Friends, at the bottom of the barrel, the real question about Calvinism is, did you change your heart and then God save you? Or did God change your heart, open your eyes, and then you saw who Jesus truly is? Does it begin with you a blind leap of faith. As the beginning with God, who chose you in Christ before the foundation of the world, and now set all of these things in motion to bring you to the place of finally recognizing who Jesus truly is. Are you seeing clearly with your eyes? If you're seeing Jesus for who he is, joy will erupt in your soul. You may need some corrective lenses. That's what the Bible is for. It's to correct our sight, help us to see the spiritual realities of life. So, two brief applications here today. First of all, for those who may not know, who may not see Jesus, the light of the world, clearly. Isaiah 9:2, and it's quoted again in Matthew 4. The people who have walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwell in a land of deep darkness, on them a light has shone. Jesus is that light. It's hard, it's dangerous, in fact, to walk in darkness. But when you see the light, by that light, you see everything else. Another verse, 2 Corinthians 4:4. The God of this world has blinded the minds of unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. The God of this world is the one who is intent on blinding our eyes. Don't let the world squeeze you into its fold, because that involves blindness. It's God who made the world and everything, and it is God who sent Christ, and he is the light of the gospel that shines in our hearts. He is the image of God. What does God look like? Look to Christ. Secondly, then, for Christians, 1 John 2:11 says, whoever hates his brother is in darkness, or literally exists in darkness, and walks in darkness. This verse is teaching us that you can be a true believer in Jesus Christ, but on a horizontal level, in relation to your brothers and sisters in Christ, you can exist in darkness and walk in darkness. And if you're there, you have no idea where you're going, because it says the darkness, the relational darkness, has blinded his eyes. Friends, this is what conflict entails. This is why there are times in churches where conflict erupts, and it's not pretty. And now all of a sudden the church is distracted, and the church is preoccupied with relational crises. Here, notice he doesn't say that Satan's doing all these things, although I think ultimately he is. But if you hate your brother in your heart, you hate your sister in your heart, if you gossip about one another, if you deceive one another, if you hold one another merely to a standard of law without the gospel, then things are going to get really confusing really fast. The law kills, the Spirit gives life. I think these are a couple places where, again, this theme of light is used to illumine some other doctrines. If you like those verses, I didn't include them in the bulletin, but I'd be happy to share those with you. But I just burden that, number one, we see that today is the first installment. This man ends with, I do not know. He doesn't understand all that God is doing, but he knows that he sees. He knows that now his life has been made whole through this rather enigmatic figure who spit on the ground and used his spit to make mud and put mud on his eyes so that the guy could wash this stuff off his eyes in a particular pool that had a particular name. I want you to see, just note one more time, that in verse 7 is the name of the pool, which means sent. That links back to verse 4. We must work the works of him who sent me. The heart of this passage is Jesus
the Messiah? Is he the divine Son of God? Is he the Son of Man prophesied by the Old Testament? Has he been sent from heaven to earth? Or is he simply some imposter? If he's an imposter, then let's chuck our Bibles and let's go, I don't know, do what? Who do we go to? Christ has the words of eternal life. But if he is who he says he is, then look at the layers of meaning in these few words. There's so many things going on. There's so many ways we can reflect upon a passage like this and find ourselves in the story of this people. May the Lord, who is the light of the world, cause those in darkness to see the light. Let's pray. The Lord our God, how we thank you for all that you've done for us. We thank you that you sent this one who is the light. Father, if your life is sun, then Jesus is like those piercing rays of light that fire off from the sun, go the millions of miles necessary, penetrate through the atmosphere so that we feel the heat of the sun on our skin. Oh Christ, thank you that in seeing you, we see the Father. Because you and the Father are one. Thank you that this Messiah sent a man to a place called Sent, so that he and all the apostles and disciples around would understand that Jesus is the Sent One. From Christ, you're the one who said, as the Father has sent me, even so, I am sending you. So Lord, help us to see uphill the light, the source of all life. Help us to see downhill that we are sent for a purpose. Help us to do the works of God, that the works of God might be displayed in a sinful and broken world. That, Lord, justice might be done. That truth might be told. That compassion might be displayed. Lord, show us who you truly are. That we might live in the light of God. I pray this thing.